You are listening to Comics Reviews with Rob and Dave.
This is kind of a slow week, I guess, with stuff.
It is, but it's kind of good. I mean, there's some new stuff we can dive into later, I think. The Invincible news I'm excited about. Excited to talk about that later. But
yeah, that seems cool.
I'm going to bury the lead right now. Bury the lead. can't let people know what we're talking about later.
The next time they show that lead in the sky, don't go to it. The lead is dead. Bury it.
Shall we talk books?
Yes.
So, Batman. I don't know if you saw what I rated this book on Goodreads.
You gave it a 2?
I did. And I have a feeling you may have liked it more than I did.
I'm not sure.
You're not sure.
I don't know what I think of it.
This is the thing about this book. So, essentially, to sum up the issue essentially sums up Tom King's run. It ends the I Am Bane storyline. It's the conclusion. And it's just Batman and Bane facing off, but Batman's thinking about all of the past events that have happened throughout Tom King's storyline with Gotham and Gotham Girl and, you know, the I Am Suicide storyline. And it all kind of culminates here, I guess, which I think is kind of cool that Tom King really likes to reference his own stuff. Like, he's doing a good job of building his own mythology within the Batman mythos, I guess. That being said, like, I wasn't a fan of this issue, though. It was fine, but it was just kind of with the whole fight. It was meandering. Like, it didn't feel like the conclusion that I wanted from a story of Batman scoring off against Bane. Especially when it was built up for 5 issues before the storyline, too. In the I Am Suicide.
I just remember he's just like, I'm gonna kill you. And then it's like, you forgot. I know you're Bane. But you forgot I Am Batman. And then, he just punches him.
He headbutts him in the nose. Dude, that is an awesome splash page. Splash page. I'm not going to lie, though. It's just, boom, headbutt. And, that was pretty much it. And then the whole last page where he's having that thought about talking to his mother, where Bruce is talking to his mother and about living up to the boy that she wants him to be, kind of thing. It was just a weird vibe. I saw a lot of people were losing their mind over this issue. A lot of praise for it, but I didn't get it. I don't know what it is with Tom King. Like, I feel like I'm hit or miss on his Batman issues because he was losing me, and then he sucked me right back in again, and now I'm starting to feel the same way I was kind of feeling at the end of the I Am Suicide storyline.
They did that. Is this a good death? It's like the first issue.
Yep. We're going over that with the Gotham Air.
I noticed that the Joker appeared.
Yeah.
What was that about?
He appeared where it said possibility, where the caption box says possibility. So I think he's just sort of imagining it. But that doesn't make sense in context with Tom King, the rest of Tom King's story, you know?
Unless he plans on using them.
I hope so. He was supposed to use them 11 issues ago, though.
Really?
But I don't know. I heard that there's some sort of Joker storyline coming up after the crossover with the Flash.
The button.
The button. That's what it's called, right? So, yeah, I heard after that is when he's going to tackle a Joker-esque storyline. Maybe talk about these three Jokers. I hope it starts immediately because I'm really curious about, you know, what the whole deal is with these three Jokers.
Yeah, they don't want to explain that. They're just letting it go along as far as they can.
Yeah, they're stringing us along with it. And I wonder if they're going to touch upon it in the crossover issue, since it seems like... crossover issues, I should say, since it seems like the button is... It has to do with the whole Watchmen thing, and Dr. Manhattan, or whoever else could be in charge.
Thomas Wayne.
Blah, blah, and Thomas, yeah, Thomas Wayne, and... So it seems like a mix of Flashpoint and Watchmen, and I mean...
So I bet part of that story is I bet Thomas Wayne is going to meet Bruce Wayne.
I would like Thomas Wayne to be a part of the story, but I don't know if I want to see him meet Bruce. I feel like that will ruin Bruce for many issues to come afterwards. Mm. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it'll make for a good story, though.
That's my prediction, based on the fact that I saw an image of Thomas Wayne.
Well, he showed up in... Oh, wait, no, he didn't. Never mind, that was Reverse Flash. That talked about Thomas Wayne or Batman or whatever.
Reverse Flash is supposed to be in this?
No, remember at the end of the Flash issue last week or a couple weeks ago? That's what I was thinking of. When Reverse Flash, he's like, oh, Thomas Wayne killed... I don't remember what he said, killed me or whatever the hell.
Yeah, that was a couple of weeks ago, because last week was the annuals thing was going on.
Yeah, that's right, it was the fifth week. It was the fifth week event type deal.
Yeah, so that threw everything off with, like, the 19th week of March.
Yeah, it's so weird how, I mean, if you only have books coming out twice a month, it makes sense, I guess, but... I don't know.
I did hear murmurings of something similar to, like, a Marvel Unlimited. Not exactly. Where it was like, oh, if you subscribed with Amazon, I think, Prime.
Interesting. But since Comixology is an Amazon company, I wonder if it would be... It's sort of like Comixology Unlimited, almost. Just DC specific?
I hear some... I just heard something about this a while ago that they're toying with the idea of having something where it's like if you subscribe you could get like not private, but exclusive content or whatever.
Interesting.
And maybe access to, like, some digital comics or something. I don't know. But DC being DC, they'll probably ruin it. And be like, we can't do that.
I'm waiting for them to get their trade schedule in order. I don't think people want to wait 9 months anymore for storylines to come out.
Yeah, I mean, I do see that some of those Rebirth books came out.
Yeah, and there are still more coming out, and then there's still going to be Volume 1s of Rebirth coming out next month, though.
Maybe they're figuring if it's a shorter amount of time that people won't buy the monthly stuff.
I don't know if that's completely true, though, because Marvel... I don't think it's true, because Marvel releases... Sometimes they'll release the trade, depending on certain issues. Like, say an annual is part of a trade paperback, and it's like the last issue. Sometimes they release the trade the same day as the annual, so you can get the issue, or you can buy the trade. Or sometimes they'll wait a couple weeks, or most of the time, Marvel, within like a month, or a month and a half, or 2 months, they'll have the trade of the most recent storyline out. They're very quick. where Image Comics does sort of the same thing where they release, I like the Image method because, I mean, granted it's creator owned stuff, so it's different. It's not corporate superheroes that you're working with, but still what Image will do, say they do five, you know, all the creators, not everyone, but five issues, you know, 5 months of comics, take 1 month off. In that month, they have the trade come out of the first five issues. Hop back in, do another five issues, take 1 month off. In that month, the second trade comes out. So they could do stuff like that. Or sometimes if they're not taking time off, you know, issues one through five are going to be in the first trade paperback. It comes out the same day as issue six. So you could buy the first trade and the beginning of the next storyline. So it's incentive to catch up and continue at the same time.
I don't know. I like the Marvel Unlimited.
I'm sure that's like a useful tool. I feel like I'm getting closer every day to pulling the plug on the monthly floppies and switching to digital. Closer with all this cleaning out, but I'm not quite there yet. But I like the thing with Marvel Unlimited, I like being up to date. And I think it would be great for back issues, like if I want to start, you know, catching up on series that I haven't read or heard a lot about, or you know, whatever the case may be. But a lot of books I like to stay current. Like a couple of the books I want to talk about today. But like I like staying current on some of those books, and I know Marvel Unlimited's probably about what, 6 months behind usually?
Yeah, they're a little behind. You are like the ocean. You want to stay current.
Bada boom. You read Green Arrow this week?
Yeah, this is like the last part of the return of Roy Harper. Pretty much Roy Harper, he resurfaces because there's this gang of the Wild Dogs, and they're trying to, it's like a kind of North Dakota pipeline kind of dealy thing going on. Okay. And so there's Indians and stuff, and so the Wild Dogs are there protect. They're paid off by that asshole Broderick guy, if you remember from the, you know, the guy with the Ninth Circuit and all that.
Yep.
Who ruined Oliver and took all his monies. So basically, Chris Broderick is like Howard Meacham, pretty much. So they're on the reservation. It was flashbacking a lot to the times of like Oliver taking in Roy, and then you see like started to do heroin and stuff like that, you know, his junkiness.
Yeah.
Which is funny that they kept that, you know. You'd think maybe for this day and age they'd be like, maybe we don't want to show the heroin so much.
Well, I think it's a part of the history too. I mean, they used it as like an anti-drug.
My board is a junkie. Yeah, I just like that cover, you know, with Oliver's eyes, and it's like bugging out of his head. It's like, my ward is a junkie. But anyway, I guess like, so there was some resentment because pretty much Oliver was pissed off when he was doing the heroin, and then he was like, oh, well, maybe I could help him or whatever. But I think at that time, like, Roy just got offended and he like went off on his own. But they reconvened, I guess, with this whole, like, Indian oil storyline thing.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, they by the end of the issue, they're, like, starting to be in good graces again. It's like they're looking towards, like, partnering up again.
Okay.
So it ends on a good note. So, yeah. So excellent. I liked it.
Excellent. I really do want to catch up with this series, but
I mean, it's no Blue Beetle, but nah.
But then again, what is?
Yeah, I just remember Blue Beetle just being like, there was that bitchy girl that was just picking on that slob friend, and she would just like smack him in the head, and he'd be like, "Why'd you smack me in the head?" And she'd be like, "Sure, a puto or something." Like, she just was mean for no reason, I remember.
Yeah, I think it was Keith Giffen not understanding how to handle teenagers. That read weird, because I read previous Blue Beetle books with them, and like that was kind of out of character for all of them, it seemed. But
yeah, because I actually, when there was a sale or whatever leading to Rebirth, when they were doing individual sales for each character when it got Blue Beetle. And I was told, ironically, by that Geek History guy that that was one of his favorite runs with the Blue Beetle. So I checked that out, and I was getting all of them, and I'm like, I'm getting tired after a while.
Yeah.
It's just the same thing with the girl just being an asshole, and the guy and their other slob friend wasn't really into it. But yeah. Speaking of Blue Beetle, you read X-Men Gold number 1?
I did. And so I talked about X-Men Prime last episode, 2 episodes ago. I don't remember, but recently talked about X-Men Prime, and it was sort of setting up the, well, it wasn't sort of, it was exactly setting up the X-Men universe as it is now, as we're starting to dive into it. And I don't remember if when I was talking about that issue that they decided to move the mansion into the middle of Central Park, because that's pretty critical for this issue. It's a crucial moment here.
It's a good place for it.
It is. You would think that. They're like Kitty Pryde's all like, hey, we're done hiding. We're just going to be out in the open in the busiest park in the world. But so this issue starts off, let me start off before I even get into it by saying this felt like such an old school issue in the best way possible. It had like a, without it being overly texty, it felt very Claremont-y, you know, Chris Claremont like in its approach to the X-Men and everything. And so this team, it's led by Kitty Pryde. It's Nightcrawler, Colossus, Rachel Gray, whatchamacallit. Crap, I'm brain farting. Anyway, Rachel is changing her name to Prestige now. So, Miss Gray, yes. Rachel Gray changed her name to Prestige. So, one of her many thousands of names. Storm and Old Man Wolverine is in this, Old Man Logan. Terax in the middle of New York City. And this fight, it's like really cheesy, and they're super quippy about the whole thing, and they're like, gonna beat this D-list villain. And there's this one awesome scene where he knocks down a building, and Kitty Pryde has to phase the entire building through another building all the way to the ground to make sure that no one, if there was anyone left inside that building or the, you know, or the one that was still standing that was about to collide with, no one got injured. And it was this badass moment, like right away, just showing that just her power, her absolute strength as a mutant with her powers and everything. And after that, you know, we're kind of sitting around watching TV, and they're still catching news clips after what happened, you know, between the Inhumans and the X-Men, and people are still, you know, crapping all over the X-Men and, you know, these genetic freaks and everything like that, and they're still so down about it. And Kitty Pryde earlier in the issue gives a speech to the people watching, like, no one was applauding them or anything happened. She's like, if this was the Avengers, you'd be applauding. Like, we're here to help. We're not going away. Not that easily. Like, we're here, and we're heroes, and we're here to do right by the public, whether you like us or not, kind of thing, which I thought was a great moment. But so, they're in Central Park with, the mansion, and they're playing softball, and some dude from the mayor's office comes up to Kitty and Logan as they're sitting around, and he's like, oh, I'm from the mayor's office. And she's like, yeah, but I, you know, I talked to the mayor, we're allowed to be here, cleared the paperwork. He's like, I know, everything's legal, but, you know, here, you might want to take a look at this. And they start hitting them with like tax fees and shit like that, and all these, it's a bill for $18 million, and like all these property taxes and rent that the city's starting to charge the X-Men for keeping a mansion there, which in part makes sense because they put a fucking mansion in the middle of Central Park. But also, along with the theme of the issue, it kind of goes to show that the Inhumans have no regard or no care for the mutants hanging around. So they're like, let's just charges them an obscene amount of money. And then this sort of, it just ends with the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants showing up. And we're not quite sure which Brotherhood of Evil Mutants this really is. But the whole issue was a lot of fun. It was Mark Guggenheim was the writer, and Artie and CF was the artist. And really pretty book. A lot of fun. Like I said earlier, it's it felt very old school X-Men in its approach. I think I'm kind of hoping we're getting a lot of new villains or a lot of lesser known villains or lesser used ones, maybe make it a little more fun and interesting. This team seems to be good. You're going to have the drama with Kitty and Colossus. Oops, excuse me. Since, you know, they used to date, we have a little bit of that here. It's cool seeing Rachel Gray take a new role and pick a new nickname out, see how that affects her as her demeanor and everything like that. And that was just a really fun book. Highly recommended.
Yeah. There's a Guggenheim sale on Comixology.
There is. I don't know if by the time we air this episode, it'll still be going on. But as of right now, I'm not sure when it ends. But yeah, as of right now,
You could get Guggenheim in a decent way.
That's true. I really like a lot of his comics. I like his TV shows too. It's not even that, but I feel like he's very. His strengths show more in the books than they do on the television shows. I think he's a great writer.
Oh, it ends tomorrow.
It ends tomorrow. Okay.
Wait, no. When the 9th is Sunday, it ends Sunday.
Sunday night. So, yes, listener, I don't know when we're airing this, but you probably missed the sale. So, which I didn't pick anything up yet, and I don't really have the money to. Otherwise, I might. I know there's an X-Men trade on there, and a couple Secret Wars tie-ins that he's written too. I know that.
Yeah, it looks like there's lots of Blade stuff, Civil War, Wolverine stuff, and S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah, so there's a bunch of stuff.
Definitely worth looking into. And
this looks like all Marvel.
It is. It's a Marvel sale.
He does DC stuff, too?
He did. I don't think he's working on anything DC right now. It's really funny that he's writing for Marvel, but he's producing a DC show. Like, that cracks me up. I feel like Jeff Loeb probably did the same thing, too, when he was producing for... I mean, he produces a lot of the Marvel shows, but he's mainly a Marvel writer now. But I think he's written his fair share of DC in the past, so...
And there's Squadron Sinister.
I think that was the Secret Wars tie-in.
Squadron Supreme is like they're copying the Justice League.
I don't really follow Squadron Supreme or Sinister, so I'm not too sure what's going on. I do know that there was a major death in one of the first issues of that book a year or two ago, and it sounded pretty wild, and I really wanted to pick it up, and then I never did. So, yes, I also read... I read a lot this week. I read Flintstones and Jessica Jones and caught up on Elektra, and I forget what else I've read. America number 2 came out, but last book I want to talk about is Champions number 7, and this picks up, you know, right where 6 left off, where the freelancers beat up the homeless dudes and they tell them that the champions did it, and so champions are getting some bad PR because of the whole thing. They get all, you know, they're all pissed off, and they're essentially under arrest. They're being held at some police station, and Vision comes because his daughter is part of the champions to check up on her and pick her up. And he's like, hey, you know, having an Avenger might help you guys out a little bit. But in the all new, all different Avengers, Ms. Marvel, Nova, and Spider-Man all quit because they didn't quite get along with Vision or the rest of the team. So there's a whole lot of tension going on here, and they essentially tell him to go scratch and to leave. And so they find out that the freelancers are they're condemning people's homes, kicking them out, like foreclosures and stuff like that, to make room for a huge apartment complex. And I think this is in Minnesota. So the champions find out and they're like, this is ridiculous. Like, you can't do this. This isn't right. So they go and they have a square off with freelancers. They beat the freelancers. They ask them to apologize on TV. Freelancers do that. And then they're like, well, everything seems all squared up, except for at the end, one of the freelancers reveals that the tower that they're building with the 38 luxury residential suites in place of all the homes that they tore down and kicked the people out of is going to be called Champions Tower, because champions were using their C, their logo, and asking, you know, anyone who wants to do good in earlier issues to please use the logo. Like, this is going to be a logo for good, and no one bothered to like trademark the logo. So the freelancers did. And now it looks like that the, Champions Tower. So now it's given champions a bad look that they're the ones that actually kicked the people out so they can make money off of the space. So it's an interesting turn. It read very similar to, with the whole freelancers co-opting their symbol. You know, it sounded like the whole thing with a few months ago when, after the election, people started wearing the safety pins, and then you heard word online that Nazis were trying to co-opt it and all this shit, or, like, the neo-Nazis, or, like, the whole thing with the cartoon frog, like, stuff like that. But, so it was in... Yeah, so it was interesting with them co-opting the Champions logo. So it's, and I don't know, this issue's, it's, I mean, this book is just really fun. It's great. It's gorgeous. Umberto Ramos is the artist, and I hope he never leaves this book. Mark Waid writing, and I feel like he understands teenagers. Where earlier we were talking about Keith Giffen not really getting it, I guess, but or I was anyway. But Mark Waid, I feel like, understands kids at their core. But Champion 7, go ahead and read it.
As far as I'm concerned, everybody's been co-opting the safety pin thing from me, because since 1985 the zipper on my pants broke, so I've just been using a safety pin to keep it in place.
There you go.
Yep, so you're all a bunch of copycats.
You were the originator.
Yep. But speaking of safety pins, there was another issue of Superman this week, and it included Batman. Basically, in this issue, you have Superman and his wife and child. They're all in the Hamilton County. Basically, there's this little girl or whatever that's friends with the son, John, but the uncle is some, like, evil asshole. And he's, like, got some milk or whatever, which is maybe suppressing, like, John's powers or something. Like, Batman goes to investigate because he doesn't trust the farmer. Mm-hmm. You know, he just goes in the barn, and maybe he's about to milk the cow or just get some evidence of, like, what's the milk in the cow. And basically, it just, like, all, like, he tries to get milk from the cow, and it just all turns up, like, these weeds are attacking him and all this shit, and that's how it ends.
Sounds really fucking bizarre, I'm not gonna lie.
But I'm interested to see what happens next. But, that was about the issue. It was basically like Batman's coming to town, and he's lecturing Clark and saying, you know, your son is, he could be more of a threat to everybody than you. He could be more powerful, because something with combining the alien DNA with the human DNA, so that's supposed to make him, like, Superman. But, so basically, Bruce is saying, like, oh, something's holding him back. It's like, it could be, like, you know, whatever, what's the word? It's like a familial thing or something. Like, maybe they're restraining him, or his nurture or whatever is holding him back.
Okay.
But then they find out, no, it's just the guy with the poison milk that's holding him back. Like, the guy is an asshole. You know, the farmer guy, who is the grandfather of the little girl. You know.
Okay.
So that's about it. with the Batmans. Supermans.
Does that tie into action at all, or no?
No, I think this is the end of the action, any action tie-ins, because that was pretty much to set up, what do you call it? Basically, the crossover had to deal with the Dr. Oz or whatever, or Mr. Oz or something. And once, I guess pretty much what happened, once they merged the old Superman and the new Superman,
mm-hmm.
that was the end of it. You know, so there, it's not crossed over. Now it's splintered off just back into its own story.
Gotcha.
You know, but I mean, in both Action Comics and Superman, both titles have always had like Lois and his son, John. And yeah, so that's about it. I was telling you like that I probably really should have read Superman, like the Rebirth a year ago, because it kind of explains a lot of the stuff.
Yeah.
You know, why he came back, why the old Superman was dying, apparently. Basically, with, what's her name? Lana Lang. Basically, what was happening when the old, when the new 52 Superman was dying, and, Lana Lang wanted to take his ashes and bring them to, like, to bury them with his parents or something, or I don't know what they do, or take his remains so he could be buried with the parents, and the pre-Flashpoint Superman's like, no, I could go to the Fortress of Solitude and I could regenerate him with this regeneration matrix, it's called, because I guess that's what was used to bring him back or something.
Okay.
Like when he died, like, you know, in the 90s or whatever.
Yeah,
You know, with the black suit and all that shit. But it didn't work. But, yeah, so that's pretty much how it ended, that it didn't work. And then at the end of the issue, it was like, oh, follow the adventures in Superman and Action Comics. So I was like, damn it, I should have read this before. But who cares? It doesn't matter. We all know what happens. Mr. Mexipix, the Dominican Republic, just came back, and that was about it.
Yeah, maybe I'll try to, I was telling you earlier, you know, off air, but I feel like every now and again I dabble with Superman, but it never sticks.
Yeah.
And I'm not a fan of the character, but I feel like I desperately want to like this character. Because I do like Superman's stories. I don't know. Nothing was working. And then when I jumped into Action 975, I wasn't a fan of that issue, really. So.
Was it, that was the crossover one?
Yeah.
Yeah, what's really interesting and confusing all at once is the fact that they when they say that Superman would not work in this day and age, they're absolutely correct. In reality, he would not work in this day and age. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't disagree with them. But the fact is, I don't really want to see that in like a universe where there's already a darker character, and he's supposed to be more optimistic, you know.
Well, I forget who said it, and I wish I could quote them properly, give them credit. And I don't remember if I've mentioned it on this podcast before, but someone said the key to writing a great Superman story isn't putting him up against the most insane villains that match his powers or anything. It's putting him in a situation where he can't save everyone, because that's going to kill him the most. And I've always thought that to be kind of true of that character as well. Yeah,
I know, like, on, because I like to read these arguments on Twitter with the peoples, and Like, I guess Dan Slott was arguing with some fan. They're like, saying, oh, well, everybody hates Superman, so yes, I should just... Or no, I'm going to let these Zod kill all these people, you know, because I don't want to kill anybody. And Dan Slott's like, no, if you're writing a Superman, you shouldn't put him in that situation in the first place where he has to snap someone's neck.
That's very true.
You know, so... But
the writers should know better than that.
But it's kind of confusing because I do understand why they're portraying him like they are, you know, because of this day and age. I mean, it's accurate, you know. It's like going back to, I see these like clips too. I guess it's kind of similar, but like you see these old clips of like the old Tim Burton Batman movies, and like I guess people who worked on the script, and they were talking about people were saying, like, oh, well, this Batman, because Michael Keaton's Batman did kill people, and the guy's like, he's like, you know, fans are saying, like, oh, Batman, he would never kill people, but in this day and age, you know, it's a little bit different, you know, just like, taking him to jail or whatever, you know, something, it's not gonna really, like... You know, it's not going to work with the type of criminals, you know, in the real, you know, in the society and everything. But, which I guess that's kind of a similar thing. But I do think that if you're clever enough and if the writing is good enough, then they should be able to find a way around those problems. Because if you stray too much, then it's not necessarily the character anymore. Like, you look in the, you know, people will still argue, well, oh, Christian Bale Batman killed people. And I still contend he did not kill people. He didn't kill Harvey Dent. He was saving Commissioner Gordon's son, and he knocked him out of the way. But he didn't intentionally, just like, oh, I want to kill this guy. Because both him and Dent landed in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
To my recollection. And the whole thing about, like, Ra's al Ghul, he killed him because he didn't save him. No, it was Ra's fault in the first place because they were on a train, which was because of him and his plan, and he fought him on the train. And also, if he's supposed to be this great tactician, he would have figured out a way off of the train. So basically, he wasn't a killer. You know. And I think that the Affleck killing aspect, it could have worked. But the thing is, you didn't build up from anything. We're just to presume there's this long history that he's been fighting crime for 20 so years. So when you're just introduced to a new Batman you haven't seen at all, and he's just like mowing down people and stuff and trying to kill Superman, it's unusual because there was nothing to bring us up to that point.
That's fair.
So I don't know what I was talking about. But yeah, you were just talking about Superman and yeah.
How I want to get into the character. But I think these are all points that, you know, maybe it's I'm not finding the right writer for Superman to get into. And I was kind of into, you know, Morrison's Action Comics for a little bit. Like, his All-Star Superman book is phenomenal, but
yes,
that's also an Elseworlds tale, you know, so it's not even in continuity technically.
Well, yeah, and Superman for All Seasons, that was Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale, and that was another really good one too. And I do agree, like, the best stories are like the ones where he's all like, he's all good and everything, and it's like it doesn't waver. And I guess, there's a part of me that understands why they're having such a problem with him in the movies. But then on the other hand, I guarantee you, if a Marvel movie maker, if Marvel had their hands on Superman, let's say Marvel had the rights to all the Marvel Universe plus Superman for some reason or whatever. You know, like, Marvel and DC lost a bet and had to give the rights to Marvel.
They lost a game of poker.
Yes. they could make a great Superman movie tomorrow.
1,000%.
So, I don't know. I'm kind of like, you know, I could see the problems that they're having. You know.
But I think a lot of it is people have issues with characters that are too powerful.
Hmm.
Where Superman has everything. It's not like a Hulk too powerful or Thor, because they have their limitations. Thor, you know, and Thor's like, or say like Hulk, right? You know, Hulk has his limitations. He's still, when he's Banner, he's just human. He's a super incredibly intelligent human, but he's human. Where Superman is always alien, always super power. You know, he's always on, essentially. No
slightly
matter what.
Off.
And I think maybe people have problems with that. Which is why you see Captain America movies be successful, where it's like, yes, he's a super soldier, but he's still human after everything is said and done. He was born a normal human, a regular person, happened to have the super soldier serum and whatnot.
Bane venom.
You know, the Bane venom. But I don't know.
But, yeah, but I feel like after these, I think in this next phase of DC movies, I think they're going to try to, you know, improve upon that with this Superman.
I don't think you can come back from it, though.
Hmm.
I think once you're a character like Superman and you take a life in the first movie, that's... Like, that's something he's always going to have to struggle with as a character in these films from now on. It's always going to be a part of him, no matter what. Even if they clean it up. Unless they create a completely new Superman somehow for this universe. Like, they keep the same Superman here. It's, you know, that's a part of him that you cannot let go. That's...
I think they will try to switch the tone, I think, after all these. Not necessarily will they be successful, but I think they're going to try to make it lighter, I think, with the Superman movies.
Maybe. I don't know how they can, though. Or how they can successfully.
Well, they'll probably get... I mean, Zack Snyder, I would believe, is done. And I think even if he's not done... He's not going to be directing another Superman movie. I know that they were talking about getting... I forgot his name. The guy who did Kingsman.
Matthew Vaughn.
Yes, that's the guy. And I don't know if you've seen Kingsman.
I have not, but I've seen some of his other movies. X-Men movies, so...
Oh, yeah, he did X-Men.
He did Kick-Ass, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I only saw the first one was good. I didn't see the other one.
Yeah, the second one was good, too. I'm pretty sure he did the Kick-Ass movies. So.
Yeah, so...
Well, if he did those, then he did... whatchamacallit that you just named?
Yeah, Kingsman was really good.
Those are two Mark Miller books, so...
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's right. Who did Old Man Logan, right?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, so, and he did Huck.
Yes, Huck is the best version of Superman there is.
They should do a Huck movie. I bet you eventually that's going to happen.
I think it might, because he might have, like, a deal with some studios, like First Look or something. I don't remember, but I know he sold a couple movies to a studio maybe a few months to a year ago. It was a big deal. I wish I remember which movies it was.
That's Mark Miller.
Which comics it was.
Did he get a lot of money?
Hmm?
Did he get a lot of money? Was it lucrative?
I'm assuming it was. I'm sure that wasn't part of the details or anything. I think it was just kind of like, hey, we signed a deal for like these couple books or something like that. And I think that's pretty cool. So
yeah, if you ever become a movie person or writer... You gotta make sure you get, like, a percentage of, like, the Gross or whatever it is. You know, like what Nicholson did with Batman?
Yeah.
Because he got, like, not only did he get, like, the salary, but then he got, like, it's like he got, like, stock in the film. Or I'm not using the right terminology, but he got, like... like, whatever they grossed, he got a percentage of that, too.
Yeah, yeah.
So he made a lot more money than he should have from that movie. Because he had the intuition. He knew it was going to be very successful.
There you go.
Yeah.
Smart business move.
I mean, I want to see all these people make a lot of money.
Absolutely. I don't want to see anyone fail.
Because nowadays, I mean, they're making an Invincible movie. So I'm, like, thinking they're just going to make every fucking every single comic I'm hearing of, they're making like a TV show or a movie.
Yeah, but Invincible is something that's going to end at issue 144, 45. It's had this super long run. It started in 2003.
Oh, that far back.
Yeah, plus it's a Robert Kirkman. He started around the same time he started Walking Dead, maybe a little bit afterwards. But
and he did Preacher too, right?
No, that's Garth Ennis.
Oh, okay.
And but Outcast, that's on Showtime, that's a Robert Kirkman comic book as well. So that's the thing. It's like, I think people want to tap into his properties, you know, his
Walking Dead thing.
Exactly. They see, you know, and I'm not sure how Outcast is doing as a television show. It's on Showtime. I'll never really watch it, to be honest, just because it's Showtime. I don't get Showtime. Mm. It's kind of impossible for me to watch it. But the comic is so good. So good.
That's
and,
Outcast?
Outcast, yes. By Robert Kirkman and Paul Azaceta.
Yeah, because I keep on thinking of Andre 3000 now.
Outcast with a C. So, but no, definitely, I highly recommend you check that out. Invincible is great because it's its own superhero story while sort of poking fun at mainstream conventions. And each character is sort of an analog for another superhero character in the Marvel or DC world, and it's kind of playful and tongue in cheek. And
well, the guy's name's Grayson, right? Because I read the first issue.
Yeah,
it was in some on Comixology. There's free issues, so yep. I saw this like huge sampler of like what is it, Image Comics?
Yes,
and that was like the first story. So it was like, I will read this and pay nothing. So I read that one.
Dude, you got to read that book. It's so good. I'm not caught up. I'm kind of all over the place with it right now. Last issue I read, I think, was like 118 or 125 or something. I forget which issue it was, but no, it's so much fun. It's nice to be able to read a superhero book outside of the big two continuity and everything like that too. And not that, I mean, we talk about DC and Marvel books mainly on this podcast, but you know, I read a ton of other stuff as well, but sometimes it's really nice to, you know, I like reading indie stories, you know, a lot of the creator owned books, because they're not superheroes and they're just stories in comic book form. But I do really enjoy superhero stories outside of that setting too, and Invincible nails it. And I think, what is it? It's Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're doing it for
Universal.
Universal, yep. Universal Pictures.
I'm kind of sick of just seeing Seth Rogen all the time. I'd like to see somebody else get involved with all these things.
You know? I agree, but I mean, so far, him and Evan Goldberg are behind Preacher, and the Preacher series is really good on AMC.
Mm. Yeah, I still haven't seen that one.
I absolutely love it. I think there are a lot of really great comic properties out right now that are kind of flying under the radar. Legion, no one's really talking about it. I had it on here, but I kind of took it off because I really want to. I feel like I can't talk about that show without giving too much away, but it's absolutely insane. Everything's so deliberate, and every like square inch, you know, every little inch of space on the screen is
every cubic yard
on the screen. No, it's all like it's very intentional.
Every liter of cola.
Exactly. Leader of freaking Cola. But, no, Legion's a great show. Preacher's really good. I can't wait for the second season to start in, I think, 2 months. It's coming back. But, I mean, you know, Seth Rogen's behind it. It's funny because when everyone heard about that, myself included, I'm like, I mean, I know he's a fan, so I'm sure he's going to treat it right. But it's still, I'm like, is it going to be like all dick and fart jokes now? Or like what, you know, what is it? And I mean, Preacher has its fair share of humor like that sometimes, but it's a completely different story altogether too. It's like a weird road trip story about relationships at its core, and so far they've been nailing it on the show. And I don't know, you know, I get what you're saying about Seth Rogen being the one to, you know, do all these things, maybe someone else, but if he's the one willing to do it and if he's going to do a great job, I'm for it.
Yeah, I guess that's what matters when it's at the end of the day. But yeah, it's just, I don't know, I just get perturbed sometimes because it's like you see in like Hollywood, it's like the same people, like the, you know, like the Seth Rogen, Jonah Hill, those, that Franco, it's like they're all involved with everything, and I'm like, where are the other people, you know? It just seems like it's a certain group of people.
Yeah, but I'm a fan of that group of people, so I'm not complaining. All like the Judd Apatow-esque people, like that whole...
Yeah. It's like the it's like the, you know, it's like the coaching tree. It's like back to the NFL. It's like a lot of the NFL coaches, they came from like, what is it, Bill Walsh or whatever. And then it's like Holmgren. And it's like there's these offshoots of these certain, or like Belichick. It's like a lot of people, you know, will coach under them and then they'll go off to other places and stuff like that. It's kind of like that.
So, do you want to continue with news, or should we talk Powerless?
Yeah, there's Powerless. We'd probably be talking about Arrow now, but there is no Arrow, because for some reason they're taking, like, a 3-week break for no reason. They always do these arbitrary breaks. I actually heard that, I think Legends was the only show that aired a new episode this week.
It was the finale this week. I was mistaken. I thought the finale was last week, but...
And I'll talk about that a little bit. I didn't watch it, but from my understanding, it's like everybody died.
I saw the last 2 minutes of it because when I DVR'd iZombie, Legends... It caught the last couple minutes of Legends on the DVR, so I finished it. And, they ended up in Los Angeles, and there were dinosaurs, but in 2017.
Yeah, I heard that basically they all died, but then they all came back. Or most of them came back.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm confused about that, but, yeah, so that happened. But on, I guess on Powerless, they were just, it was all about darts and Green Arrow games with darts.
You see some of the villains they had up on the board too.
Yeah, I did notice that. They had
Deathstroke. They had Merlin up there.
Count Vertigo, but not the cool one from CW. That was like Count Chocula.
No, they had the Andrea Sorrentino Count Vertigo though, so it's equally as badass since he's a phenomenal artist.
Yeah, I mean, so, like, the episode was pretty much that the characters, basically, it starts out with that girl that dated Tom on Parks and Recreation. She's Green Fury or Fire or something. I had to look it up.
Green Fury, my voice is correct. Green Fury, I think it was?
Yeah, but if you look it up, her name is Fire.
Then maybe it was Green Fire.
No, but she is Green Fury, but if you look it up on, like, the internet, it's like her character's name's Fire, so I don't know if this is, like, an alternate name or something.
I have no idea.
Because I never heard of this character before.
I thought it was funny that her and Abed kept... Abed, Danny... I'm gonna never not refer to him as Abed.
Daniel Pudding.
But, Mr. Pudding had those awkward moments, and he was so, because of that one that one time she saved him, he kept trying to get thrown off the, kept trying to pull these stunts for her to save him again. And the scene when he falls off the balcony, and then the Roman dude, like the guy who looks like a, like a Roman warrior almost, or like a Greek god or whatever he, looked like, he saves him. He's like, "You don't seem too happy about that." He's like, "Nah, it's fine."
Yeah. So pretty much, I guess she's Emily is like a senior vice president of something, and they think she's a receptionist.
Of research. My God, I'm sorry. I apologize to the listener. Of research and development.
Yeah, and she goes into Van's office, and she wants an office, and he's afraid of giving anybody, like, self-esteem. And then she challenges him to a game of Green Arrow darts. And then she's not trying in the beginning, because all the co-workers are telling her that you can't, because this guy has, like, he is fragile.
Because he's a man-child.
Yes, and he can't take it, and basically all she really wanted was the office. But then when he was all gloating after he won, then she had to be a jerk, and then she kind of realized she was a jerk.
Yeah.
Even though he's a jerk. So the moral of the story is they're all jerks.
The best part is when they're going through all the awards that he's won. And when he beat Dr. Dre in the rap battle.
Yeah.
And then he's looking at afterwards, after Emily goes off on him, and he's looking at the award, and he's like, "Dr. Dre, was that even you? Are you even a real doctor?"
He was like the most perceptive baby of 1971 or something like that.
Failure.
Spelled it wrong.
The show is super quippy and excellent. I don't know. It's like everyone's on all the time, and I could see why a lot of people wouldn't like it, because it really is an assault on your senses with joke after joke after joke, but I find it absolutely hysterical.
I think their problem in the ratings can be resolved by this. They should just call it Chicago Powerless. So that, I mean, I looked it up because a couple weeks ago I was just curious to see what their ratings are. And they're among the lowest rated of the NBC shows. And I noticed that, adversely, the shows on NBC with Chicago in their name are among the highest rated. So I'm thinking that this is a compromise we could come from. Chicago Powerless or Powerless Chicago. And that should solve it. I mean, I did see somebody on the Facebook page said that they think, like, Vanessa Hudgens said that, oh, leaving the Powerless, the set for the last time or whatever. But she could have meant for this season. I mean, you don't know how many episodes they are for this season.
Her character might be done, too. Maybe, you know, what's to say that she doesn't, like, her character doesn't get a promotion to the Gotham office, and they write her off or whatever.
Yeah, so people are kind of jumping the gun.
Until I officially hear it's canceled, I'm not going to sweat it, because I don't want to get worried about it. I just want to enjoy the show right now.
Yeah, I kind of withheld that the last show, but now that I see that they're starting to have new episodes the last couple of weeks, I'm not sure about this whole thing. So, we'll see. I mean, if I had to guess, I don't know how long it's going to last. I don't know how it really fits in with all their stuff.
I'm happy if it gets, like, a complete half season. You know, that if they don't cancel it before then, I'm fine with it. Because I wasn't expecting more out of the show. Would I like to see it reach a second or third season? Absolutely. But I'm kind of not expecting it to... I just absolutely enjoy it for what it is, and I want to just see them keep going with it for, you know, don't cut it short, I guess.
I mean, it's 72,000 times better than Gotham, and Gotham is still airing. So, I mean, if it doesn't work, maybe just move it to, like, CW or something.
The thing with Powerless is it's completely different from every other superhero show on television because there are barely superheroes in the show. It's about normal people in a world inhabited by superheroes.
Yeah, I mean, I think it still has, like, potential, you know. I mean, if it ultimately doesn't end up working out, there's stuff that they can learn from this and, you know, to keep it going. I mean, they're the only, like you said, they're the only people doing, only publisher that's doing shows like this. Marvel, at one point, was going to do Damage Control and Most Wanted and all this stuff, but then, you know, those plans changed, and, like, the Inhumans plans changed, too, because, I mean, that was supposed to be a movie, and now they kind of, like, split the difference. The first two episodes are going to be in IMAX, and then the rest of it's going to be maybe shot with IMAX cameras, I think, and just be aired on television on ABC. Man,
I think. I really wanted to see a Damage Control show. I was so looking forward to that. They also have all the Netflix stuff, so they have to focus on that.
But yeah, that's pretty much Powerless. That's kind of a Green Arrow talk, because there was no Green Arrow.
There was no Green Arrow, but there was kind of Green Arrow on the show.
Yeah, you get your Green Arrow this week.
We got our archery fix, so.
Yeah, I wish that game was in the store.
I would buy it, too.
So there was some newsy kind of stuff.
The first thing we'll talk about, I'm pretty excited about. There's going to be a Squirrel Girl-centric New Warriors television show. Full series order. This is earlier this week, I think. This is a couple days ago. Newsarama was posting about it. It will air on Freeform, which Freeform, I think, used to be ABC Family, if I'm not mistaken.
Probably.
I think that's what it is. I don't... really watch Freeform. All I know is that they air Harry Potter all the time, so my DVR is always recording, like, the Harry Potter, like, reruns, I guess. But, yeah, and I'm pretty sure Freeform was also supposed to do another series. Oh, maybe that was Hulu. But, yeah, I'm excited for a new Warriors show, and especially Squirrel Girl-centric. That should be a lot of fun. And if it's going to be on Freeform, then It's definitely going to be more kid-friendly, or at least, like, maybe young adult. Yeah, at the bottom it says of this article in Newsarama, Freeform's mission is to deliver incredible content to young adults, and Marvel Television seamlessly aligns with that mission. We couldn't be more proud to collaborate with them on Marvel's New Warriors, said Carrie Burke, Freeform's Executive Vice President of Programming and Development. Oh, yeah, they're also airing Cloak & Dagger. That's what it is. Cloak & Dagger is the other Marvel show that Freeform's doing. It's cool to see Marvel properties spread over so many different networks and everything. What they're doing is essentially making a show for everyone. Maybe Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. isn't your speed. Maybe all the Netflix stuff is too dark. So maybe this Freeform stuff coming out, New Warriors, a Cloak & Dagger, maybe that might be more your speed. It seems like there's a show for everyone, so they have, like, all viewership and demographics covered, and I think that's pretty cool. It's kind of how you take over television.
When's that Runaways thing come out?
That I don't know, and that's on Hulu, I think. I want to say that's Hulu. I could be wrong.
Yeah, it is Hulu.
It is Hulu. I think that's 2018 sometime, and I'm excited for that. Yeah.
Brother of Stevie Ray Vaughan and Jimmy Vaughan.
It's very true.
And Move On also.
The coolest brother of them all.
I remember them saying that there's going to be some, I think, documentary on Bill Finger on Hulu, too.
I don't think it's like a movie. I think it's like a docuseries or part of a docuseries.
Yeah, yeah. So you're just going to hear about the many ways Bob Kane ripped off Bill Finger.
Yeah. That's probably what the show is going to be. It's like, yeah, oh, this amazing exactly person got screwed over for many years before he was posthumously praised and revered. Yeah. So.
If there was no Bill Finger, Batman would look like a complete asshole. He'd have wings and not a cape, and he'd have his domino mask and a red suit.
He'd probably just end up looking like the Shadow.
Yeah.
It's what everyone kind of speculates or agrees upon. So,
but you see those old drawings that Bob Kane did? It's like he had blonde hair, and he had a black domino mask and a red shirt, and his wings and his cape was like wings.
Yeah.
Like Da Vinci style wings, that's what they were going for. And Bill Finger's like, oh, check this out. Have a cowl. And everything you know that's like iconic about Batman, that's all Bill Finger. Bob Kane just said, oh, we should name a character Batman. And that was his contribution there.
Well, it's sort of like the whole Stan Lee, Jack Kirby thing, only on the DC end.
So Kirby did all the real designs and everything.
Yeah, if you talk to anyone in the comics industry, like, all creators and publishers kind of agree that Kirby was, like, the force behind it, and Stan Lee was sort of the face of the production. But you should read The Untold Story of Marvel Comics. It's really awesome. It's a great book. I read it a few years back. Tells a lot of behind the scenes.
They should name it. Name a documentary Kirby Your Enthusiasm. We already talked about the Invincible movie, so I guess that's...
We did. Blah, blah. Yeah, but real quick, this kind of makes me very happy, this news. Marvel announced this week that they are finished with events for at least 18 months after the Secret Empire event comes out, which could not make me any more happier than I am right now, because... I've reached critical mass with event fatigue. Even hearing about it on the other end with DC when they announced the event, like Scott Snyder is doing an event for Batman, and at first I kind of rolled my eyes, but then I saw that it was out of continuity, and I'm like, all right, maybe I could get behind this, because one of the big problems with events is that it consumes the entire world of what's happening in the book. So if you have a book that relies on any major continuity whatsoever, chances are it's getting affected by whatever event is happening at that time. You know, look at how many Civil War tie-ins there were. Even if they had barely anything to do with Civil War II, you know, as it aired last summer, like, they still got the banner on them, and they still, you know, and that turns people off. Like, I've dropped so many books because of crossover throughout the years, because of either crossovers or events that I didn't want to read, and I didn't want it affecting the story, and I'm like, oh, I'll hop back onto the story as soon as this is done. And sometimes I would, and sometimes I wouldn't. I would just end up dropping books, maybe unintentionally, because of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't want to sound like I'm coming down on events completely, because there are events that I enjoyed, obviously. Secret Wars was good, and AVX, I enjoyed a lot. Civil War, the original, or Siege, stuff like that. But, you know, like, I remember Fear itself kind of bogging everything down. And I wasn't a fan of Original Sin at all. And I love Jason Aaron, but I was kind of frustrated by that whole thing, by that event. And, you know, Avengers... X-Men Axis was kind of frustrating too. It's just like, I feel like a lot, and especially because every event is supposed to be this world changing, you know, shakeup, and oh my God, this is the one you have to read. And then half the time, everything just resets afterwards anyway. They're always plagued with delays. They promise you, oh, this event's going to be 8 issues. Then it turns into 9 issues, and that 9th issue ends up being 5-6 months late, you know, and then it holds up other books, and knowing a lot of that always, it creeps into the reading experience for me, at least. And it's kind of frustrating. So I'm completely cool with them not releasing holding any events in the comics for at least a year and a half. They want to do anything, do like a little mini series, do like a 4 or 5 6 issue mini series, you know, do something like that, tell its own little story. It doesn't have to be this universe spanning event that touches so many books. So yes, that makes me very happy.
Well, that's good. I'm not up to date enough to be affected by that.
That's true, but it sucks too because
the continuities.
Well, the thing about it too, it's not even that it affects every book, but like the completionist in a lot of people is like, well, I don't read, you know, I don't know, whatever book. Let's say New Warriors, just because that's on my head. Say New Warriors is happening and people don't read it, and then there's a, you know, Civil War tie-in. So people jump into New Warriors and it boosts sales for a couple issues, but then they drop the book afterwards. And then, so it's not representative of the book altogether. Like, you're not really gaining readers afterwards, probably. And people feel like they need to complete the event experience when it might be an issue that only kind of sort of relates to the event, but it doesn't even have anything to do with it. And I feel like it's just a lot of false promises with events. I don't know. I wouldn't, you should be happy reading the way you are, because then you could read the complete story, you know, unworried about how it affected other books that were coming out at the same time or anything like that. And, you know, just a story as it is, as it's meant to be told.
There was a teaser for the Defenders this week. Was it this week?
I believe
so. I can't tell. Every day seems to blend into one after a while. But yeah, so they had that. I guess that was this week, and it had them all in an elevator. Matt Murdock had a do-rag on again, like in the first season. And so my immediate thought was, well, that's all you had to do with Iron Fist.
True, but the thing is, like, the other three characters aren't hiding their identity, where Matt Murdock is the only one that is.
Oh, I just want to see the goddamn...
I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying, but it's like he's the only one that needs to conceal his face in that scene to do what he's doing. Hmm. Do whatever the fuck they're doing. I don't know. The teaser was pretty cool, and then seeing Jessica Jones look at the camera and then disrupt the feed.
So that, yeah, that was about it. And that's happening sooner than I thought it was. I thought that was going to be in, like, September. It's in August.
Awesome.
18th. Lucky number.
Nice.
So, yeah, so the summer. That's 8 episodes I said it was going to be?
It is 8 episodes.
And so I guess there'll be something else, I guess, in the... Or well, maybe they have nothing else. Maybe
the fall, Punisher? Fall's supposed to be Punisher, and Jessica Jones is early next year.
Okay, so that makes sense, yeah, because that... Yeah, I think both Daredevil and Jessica Jones, they're in production this year at some point.
Well, Jessica Jones just started production.
Snap. Yeah, they said that somebody that I've never heard of is like another character this season on Jessica Jones.
I didn't actually see the art or read the article, so I didn't catch who it was.
Okay. It's somebody. If it was important, I'd remember the name. But it's like, I don't know. I don't know all these actors nowadays. I never hear of any of these people. But,
so was it an actor that they're talking about that's going to be on the show, or is it a character?
Yeah, like an actor. Like, no, like, oh, they cast... No, it's not like, ooh, they casted Booster Gold or some actual name. They just gave an actress and that I've never heard of. I like it when it's like they cast somebody and I know who they are. Like, they're like, oh, Rosario Dawson, she's going to be on Daredevil. I'm like, oh, that's great. I actually know who that is. You know, I hate it when it's like, oh, tablecloth, refrigerator is going to be on. I don't know who that is. You know, is on just another thing I noticed today, the Batman on film. I guess they might have been at one of these conventions and Gail Simone was at it, and they were asking her about, like, what do you think about, like, the Batgirl news? And I guess she was saying, like, I guess, like, firstly, she was happy that they, you know, they're at the point where it's like, oh, They're not like, oh, we can't make money off a Batgirl movie.
Yeah. You know?
So, that, and then she mentioned, secondly, that she's happy that Joss is, you know, attached to it. And she mentioned, because I guess he asked, like, anything about actresses to play it. And she's like, it doesn't really go, like, she didn't want to give a name because I guess she's in, she has, like, a background in theater production.
Yeah.
And she was saying that it doesn't, like, I could give you a name, but it, like, just having a name attached, it doesn't really do anything. You need to see them in action.
It's very true.
You know, and it doesn't matter. It's like, you could always dye their hair and shit. It doesn't really matter, you know, that respect.
Well, if they even bother to keep it, because Matt Murdock's supposed to be a redhead, and he's obviously not on the Netflix shows, and... You know, so it's, you know, do you want to go for the red hair look, or do you want to, you know, and
well, have someone dye their hair? I think they figured that he's disabled enough with the blindness, so they didn't need to add red hair on top of that.
See, I'm surprised that Gail Simone said, like, positive thing. Like, I would not expect her to, because she's very professional in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a very kind person, as far as that goes, but she also had like a terrible experience with that whole run. Like, she left the book, she was fired from the book, and for a couple issues, and then the internet freaked the fuck out, and they were like, there were petitions online, people were tweeting at DC, and they're like, I don't care who's writing this book, I'm not reading it ever again. And
wait, why did they fire her?
She didn't know. She just like Gail Simone, the whole reason this broke is because she wasn't on, she found out that she wasn't on the book because there was a solicit for a book coming up in a few months without her name on it. Mm-hmm. And then she had to kind of quell the situation a little bit because, like, I think Marguerite Bennett was writing an issue and she's like, guys, she's an amazing writer. Please don't take this out on her. Like, this, this isn't her fault. This is editorial. And then, so she wasn't getting along with editorial. Mm. And then what had happened was her and editorial went back and forth, and then they wouldn't let her, Gail Simone tell the story she kind of wanted to. They were pushing for them. Like, the tone of Gail Simone's run is a lot darker than the lighthearted run that followed her.
With the selfies and everything.
Yes. So as it turned out, Gail Simone was not quite wanting to do that exactly, but sort of somewhere in between. And the editor at the time was not having that. Gail Simone ended up leaving the book, and then shortly thereafter, the editor either got fired or quit too. So the whole thing was just, it was this completely messed up situation. And then I think that editor, she might have ended up at Marvel, possibly. I don't remember. But but it was like a rough situation where, and then, like, I know Gail Simone says in interviews, she's very open. Like, people are like, hey, what do you think about this run? She's like, I don't read, after I'm off a book, I don't read it. And she's like, it's no disrespect to the creators on the book, but she's like, I can never read those characters again after I wrote it, because it's like a part of me that, you know, like, no one's going to have that voice, and it's not fair to them. Like, if I read it and I can't divorce the two, and, you know, it's not a great way to criticize the book. Like, I don't want to offer opinions on it, anything like that. She's like, I cannot bring myself to read those books. So I wonder if she's even going to, well, I'm sure DC will, like, fly her out and for the premiere and stuff like that and everything. But I wonder if she's even going to want to be a part of the movie or watch them, see the movie at all. So,
Yeah. Well, doesn't she do stuff now for DC?
She did. She's not writing any more DC books. I don't even think she's writing any comics right now currently, because she made a comment. She's like, after this month, I'm actually technically not even a comics writer, because she's been kind of, I wonder maybe she will do some behind the scenes stuff with like the Batgirl movie and stuff like that. But
you know, Gail Simone was writing a lot for DC, like Secret Six and Batgirl and, you know, a few other books. And, like, she wrote Wonder Woman and it's like a ton of other stuff. But she was also at Dark Horse writing Leaving Megalopolis, which is an awesome book. And she has – oh, you know what? That's a lie, because she has a couple – She has at least one comic coming out from Image Comics in June, so she she will be writing comics, but she's not really writing anything for the big two. So,
Yeah, I'm sure they'll consult with her, especially if it's supposed to be influenced by her stuff.
Yeah.
Because that was a big part of it. Like, when that story broke, they had her Batgirl, you know.
Yep. The Adam Hughes cover from issue one.
Yeah, so... Yep. And they were quick to say that, oh, it's going to be influenced by her Batgirl stuff. So I'm sure they will consult with her.
They could actually do that too in this. Like, I know it's a standalone film, but if they want to really connect it to the greater DC cinematic universe, the DCEU, they can, because, you know, Barbara then has a past. Like, the Joker paralyzed her, but then she's not, you know, in a wheelchair, bound to a wheelchair anymore, and she's worked through it and everything like that. So, I mean, it seems like they're putting, like how they did Batman, they gave him. You're kind of in the middle of his career. Like, you could definitely do that with Batgirl too. I don't know if they want to do that, but
Well,
I'm not saying it's a good idea. I'm saying they can do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think with the movies, I think they're probably gonna try a different step with this stuff. Like, I think now that they've set up stuff, they're probably going to ease off of, like, oh, we need to just shoehorn stuff in there. You know, kind of like, you know, because when, like, Marvel was setting up the Avengers and everything, they, like, shoehorned Black Widow into Iron Man 2. And,
I didn't think she was shoehorned, though. Like, I get what you're saying, like she was kind of like a connecting piece, I guess, like how she was in Iron Man 2, but I didn't, like, I felt like she was a part of that story. I didn't feel like it was forced in any way.
Yeah, I don't know. It's been a while since I've seen that one, but I guess that's one of the things I often hear, one of the nitpicks, like, but the universe building. So, I mean, it's possible that since they already have their big heavyweights set up, they're probably less likely to just, like, reemphasize, like, the connection to everything, you know?
Well, I would prefer that they do not, if this is supposed to be a standalone film, I don't remember if they specified a standalone film in the universe or a standalone film period. Like, this is just a film.
It's in the universe.
It is in the universe, yeah, then. Yeah. Okay, but it's still a standalone film in the universe. So I'd rather them not try to connect it in any way.
Yeah, she'll be a part of it, but I mean, they didn't say who's going to cameo or whatever, you know, because, I mean, with Batgirl, you know, that leads to, like, well, you could have Birds of Prey and stuff like that. But then also that could come about and with the Sirens movie that they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And who's to say that they don't set her up in the Sirens movie? So, I don't know. But it is going to be a part of the universe. But okay. how intertwined with everything else is, I guess that remains to be seen. Because I think now they want to let the directors do their thing, you know. Because I guess they're kind of just, I mean, if they're not going to get, like, a, you know, creative mastermind, to oversee the whole thing like a Kevin Feige, they're probably going to be best just, like, you know, easing off and let the directors do what they want. Probably, I think that will happen, because, like, look at the thing with Matt Reeves. You know, they just are letting him have the reins, and, you know, because he was going to walk away because he wasn't going to get the creative control. So I'd assume that they're just going to let the directors do what they want to try to make a good story.
Mm-hmm. That's what they should do.
Yeah. But with DC, you know, hey, you never know. They're like the lottery commercial.
They are.
Hey, you never know. I did see a Gecko commercial with the Gecko Geico. He's watching Guardians of the Galaxy 2 in the theater, and then he's arguing with Groot.
Baby Groot?
Yes.
What are they arguing about?
Well, he's just saying, I am Groot. And then the Gecko's like, I don't think he read the script. They should give the Gecko his own movie.
No, because look at what happened with the cavemen. Remember they did that? They turned the Gecko cavemen into a TV show?
I never saw that show.
Nick Kroll was on it, so that was cool. But other than that,
was he a caveman?
It really wasn't a good show. I don't even remember.
He was friend of caveman.
I just remember that he was on the show. But
I remember I was intrigued when I heard that. I was like, "That's interesting."
I watched like 2 episodes, and I was like, "This isn't that good."
Yeah, they ruined it, I guess. But I think like a full length of Geico sensibilities, maybe that could work. Maybe not.
That's cool that Guardians of the Galaxy is getting that that extra push.
Yeah.
It needs it. It really doesn't.
I guess there's a lot of stuff coming out in the next couple of months, because you have that one, and then you have a Spider-Man and Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of stuff coming up.
Yep.
Or actually, I keep reversing the order. Like, Spider-Man's actually after Wonder Woman. In June.
Wonder Woman's June or May?
I
thought it was May, but you might be right, in June. But
it may be June.
Guardians is May.
Lol.
And Spider-Man is July.
I want to say Wonder Woman is June 5th.
Okay. And then, that sounds right. And then Thor is November, probably, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Wonder Woman is June 2nd. That was close. The Snyder League of America is in November. So, that's November 17th. What was the other one? Thor Fraggle Rock.
Thor Fraggle Rock.
Wow, that's November 3rd?
Yeah.
And then 2 weeks later is fucking Justice League.
Well, Marvel always has November releases. They always do May and November. Usually, are like the definite ones.
Yeah, wasn't like the second Thor in November or something?
Yep, and so was Doctor Strange.
Thor 4, they should call it Thormageddon, or Thor 4.
Or Thor, Thour.
Or the number, wait, what did you say?
Thor, but it's Thour, so it's spelled like the number 4.
Or they could do 4, but like 4, the number, and then H-O-R. Natalie Portman's not going to be in Fraggle Rock.
That's what I heard.
And I saw pictures, it's like Thor has short hair now.
Yeah.
Does he like lose his power?
I don't know what they're doing in this one.
Did they do that in the comics?
Yeah, he's not worthy right now. Jane Foster is Thor.
And that's why he's short hair?
No, I mean, he still has long hair. But wait, no, does he have short hair? He might have short hair now. He had long hair when he lost the power still, but I think he might be short-haired now.
I know in real life he has short hair.
Yes.
But I know there was times where he had long hair, Chris Hemsworth.
I just
think of that show Half in the Bag, that YouTube thing, and I guess some guy kept calling the guy Chris Hemsworth. And the other guy's like, you need to apologize to Chris Hemsworth for calling him Chris Hemsworth. And you also need to apologize to the person named Chris Hemsworth. And I thought that was funny.
That's good.
Which I haven't watched those in a while, but they have like YouTube videos and they're like, they critique movies and stuff. And
I'm not familiar with them.
I think you would enjoy, like, the critiques of, like, Man of Steel and Batman versus like, they do the superhero movies. And they were talking about, like, how, like, Man of Steel was just, like, one of the guys was just like, Man of Steel just is it feels like it's just like it just like brings you into the mind of somebody that is slowly going crazy or something like that, or is losing grasp with reality. And it was just the way they said it was really funny.
Maybe, yeah. I don't know. I feel like we talk about that. I don't like that movie, and we talk about it enough. I don't know if I want to hear other people talk about it, listen to them.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think you'd get a kick out of just, like, listening. Just sometimes hearing other people talk about stuff is just funny. I enjoyed talking about it, because it's just, like, sometimes it's like, it's like Kevin Smith says, he's like, because even he was critical of, like, BV Steel, he said, he's like, I keep on wanting to watch it. It's like, I want to love this movie, but it's like you can't. It's like you're intrigued by the fact that they messed it up. I don't know.
I've only watched it once, and I never want to watch it again.
I mean, there's things that I like about it. Like, I like the Batman parts. But sometimes it's like you're intrigued because it's just like, oh, they did this. This could have been interesting. Or this. Why did this? I don't know. It's just like an enigma. Sometimes you're just like captivated by that stuff.
All right. Well, thank you to everyone once again for tuning in to another episode of Comics Reviews. Please rate and review us on iTunes. Be like one listener, Mike. Be like Mike. If you haven't subscribed to us, please do whatever your means of podcast listening may be. You know, whether it's iTunes or Stitcher, or, well, now we are on YouTube. So,
yep.
I'm not sure if there's a station for us yet or not. If there is, subscribe. Dave, is there a station?
Yeah, it's I made a Comics Reviews channel.
Awesome.
So yes. It's there. You can subscribe. You can like. I disabled comments because I don't want to feel sad. Because I just look at what people write on comments for other people's things, and I'm just like,
Yeah, but that's fine. You know what? Even if we get negative reviews, that's still a review. Someone took the time to listen to us, so I'm cool with it.
Yeah, but I'm fragile. I don't want my self-esteem to go down.
I've been in enough bands where I've gotten messages on MySpace like, you guys should break up. And I'm like, hey, asshole,
they say that?
Yeah, like, hey, asshole, you just listen to us, so no.
Could you imagine that? I, like, open up the comments, it's like, you guys should break up. How can we break up a podcast?
I can imagine it. Because it's happened with many bands I've been in, actually, surprisingly enough. That's
not nice.
It is what it is. People are, I don't know, they just want
their pain. What are they doing? The people that are telling you to break up, they probably don't do anything.
It's insecure internet bullying is all it is, but they want to have a voice. It is what it is, so. Not that I condone their idiotic behavior, but I appreciate the fact that they took the time to listen to whatever it was that I was doing at the time. So
I think I just got scared because, like, unlike Batman on film, he said that, like, he, like, had to disable comments because people were saying, like, oh, I'm, like, they were getting, like, death threats. It's like, what?
People are, that's lunacy.
It's because he's pretty critical of, like, I mean, the guy runs a site called Batman on Film. Yeah. And it stemmed from, like, Batman and Robin, like, almost ruining Batman in films. And, like, he made a website for that. And now he's being critical of, like, this DC universe because there is reason to be. And people give them such a hard time. And it's like, that's his opinion. He doesn't have to automatically like something just because it has Batman in it.
Yep.
But, yeah. that kind of like, I'm like, wow, these people are nuts.
That's very true. But if you do want to give us your opinion, you can message us on Facebook or follow us on Instagram and Twitter and comment on our pictures and tell us how much the pictures suck or how much the tweets suck or how much our Facebook content sucks or whatever it is. But yeah, or you can find us individually online too. You can find me at Call This Rational on Instagram and Petinato Rob on Twitter. And Dave, where can you be found?
You can find me at Batman Petrucci. Feel free to hurt my feelings there. Tell me my drawings suck. And you could go to Comics Reviews, and that's another one.
There you go. So yes, thank you to everyone tuning in, and until next time, I'm Rob.
I am not Rob, I'm Dave.
Bye.
And we should break up.
You are listening to Comics Reviews with Rob and Dave.